Diana, thanks so much for being here. Diana Ault is a career alignment and executive coach. She works with tech professionals who are preparing for or facing a career transition, individuals in the workforce who want to grow personally and professionally, high-level leaders and executives who are ready to evolve in their roles, and founders and business leaders who need help strengthening their businesses, including team performance, culture growth, and organizational design. And I love this. She calls herself the No BS Career and Executive Coach. We'll get into that. Diana, thank you so much for taking part in this conversation titled Navigating Workplace Bullying, Finding Resilience and Feeling Joy, Even in Crisis. Okay. Hi, Diana.
Hey there, Andy. How are you today?
I'm doing good. So we have had a chance to talk a couple times, and so we're going to just get into it because I create and prepare questions, and I think I have more questions for you than anybody else that I've done the summit for, just by virtue
of conversation.
So
I'd be afraid.
Yeah, no, don't be afraid. You're going to dribble into this and you're going to be great. So, but I want to start with the fun stuff. And you have a lot of fun stuff in the way you approach your coaching and your advising people in difficult work circumstances. And I've been one of those. I just wish I had known you years ago. So let me start with this. You have a quote that says, there are many ways for a workplace to suck. I think you've said that.
Yeah.
So, okay. So my question for you is just in a broad sense, what's your definition of a toxic workplace? How do people know when they're in one and they need to do something about it?
Toxic workplace is super interesting. And there's a few different ways to think about it. But the one I've been thinking about more and more and more is, what is your body telling you? So I work with a lot of people that are very highly educated. Like, most of them are way smarter than me, especially if they're in the more highly technical roles.
Yeah.
But they often can intellectualize everything, overthink it, which I do because I have a freaking sash behind me that
right.
I'm an overthinker.
Yeah.
Dissociate from how their body is feeling. So they may be feeling more sick or tired, or their gut is telling them something is not right. And so if you're in an environment where mentally it doesn't feel great, like, that guy was totally a jerk to me again in front of everyone at the staff meeting, sometimes that's just whatever, you know, he's annoying. And sometimes it's starting to add up and accumulate to where your body feels it. And that can lead to depression and health problems. So that's one of my favorite things to do. Everybody wants to get a checklist, and there are things you can look for.
Yeah.
But, you know, and you also cannot look at the definition of anybody else. It's like poison or allergies is maybe more applicable. You might be allergic to peanuts so much that you have to have an EpiPen, and my tummy might just hurt if I eat peanuts.
Right. Right. You know, what you're saying reminds me so much of my own circumstance in television and television production. And I kind of joke about whether this might have been one of those things that you've identified, but also would be like a Facebook kind of clickbait thing, which is, you know, top 10 reasons you might want to look for another job. In my case, I had a recurring nightmare where my boss was like half man, half beast, and he was attacking me in a boiling cauldron. I mean, I'm joking now, but it wasn't funny then.
No.
But I also thought, and on a more serious note, but I did have that recurring dream. And it was a very, very difficult bully period.
There's a thing that a lot of career coaches talk about, the Sunday scaries, which depending on your
work,
your Sunday might actually be Tuesday or something.
The Mine was Sunday.
Before you go to work for the week, if you are feeling the pit of your stomach, dread, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And the more toxic your work environment is, the more likely that is to be really bad or start on Sunday morning. Or never stop after you leave the office on Friday.
Yeah.
There's degrees to all of this. So somebody might just be bored and dread going back to work on Monday because, I've kind of done everything that I can do with this job.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Like, they probably should look for something different too, or start working towards a promotion. But when you can't ever get rid of the Sunday scaries,
there's
probably a lot more going on.
Yeah, I want to talk more about that too. You experienced some of the stuff yourself. You're not just talking about from an expert perspective.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about your own experience?
I've had a couple of different situations. One that comes to mind is, well, probably the worst example is the one that happened right before I left corporate. And that is, I had been working a lot of hours. I was in a product management role at an ed tech company. It was an understaffed product management team. And I also had highly specialized skill. So it was really hard to just plop somebody else into that team and have it be successful. So I was overworked, and that was a problem. I was also working like 1 to 2 levels above my title, and I'd been promised promotion. And, you know, they would say, I never promised you anything, but I was promised promotion, as was a peer of mine. And then when the time came around for that, the boss that we had been working for actually had moved on within the company, but the person above that was still there, still knew about us. And they just decided to not only not promote us when they said, but they decided, well, we only need one person of that level. You two are both welcome to apply for it. They started pitting us against each other.
Yeah.
I don't do that. But the other person was a little more susceptible to that. And then they also said, and by the way, we're going to post it externally. So the job level that both of us had been doing for close to 2 years, we were basically told for.
Yeah.
And then another thing that happened was I had reported to my executive concerns about some workplace harassment that was occurring on the basis of visa status. It was a department that we worked with, so not our direct department, but the way I understood our process is that I needed to alert my, you know, my executive team member, the person I was reporting to him at the time.
Yeah.
Nothing happened, but he told me that he had taken action on it, and he lied about the action that he had taken. And I was like, no, we're not doing this anymore. So
yeah. Yeah. And how were they with taking time off? I mean, was it a decent work-life balance type of place?
Really, but for some people it was. For me, it wasn't. I ended up actually being replaced by 2.5 headcount.
Wow.
I was replaced by 2.5 headcount when I left because they had to hire a backfill for me. They had already brought in one person that was going to work in that same area that was more junior.
Yeah.
And then the director spent like a good solid half of her time working on that. And my prior director had really just run with it because he was also over allocated. So
yeah, unbelievable.
It was pretty brutal.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And as an executive coach, I mean, you talk about, and you've kind of alluded to it here, but I'd like you to go into a little bit more detail about psychologically unsafe work environments. Now, that doesn't mean, as far as my experience, is that, you know, something might fall on your head, but it sounds like you felt unsafe or others did in your workplace. And I often felt, you know, that this kind of hypervigilance, which I've learned is a term of art, where I'm just waiting for a tap on the shoulder, even though I feel like I'm doing a great job, I'm devoted, I'm loyal, I'm productive, I've been promoted a few times, but because there's a bully boss or a bully supervisor, I'm always looking over my shoulder wondering, or looking at my email wondering, when's the next
nonsense are you going
to
get?
Is going to happen to me. Yeah.
So I think, you know, if you use the analogy for physically unsafe as like something's going to fall on your head.
Yeah.
Psychologically unsafe work environment just falls in your soul.
Yeah.
Like it just eats and eats and eats at you. And I've had a couple of. So one, I was like actively bullied by a woman that was a peer who she'd worked at the company for a long time, and I was hired in as a manager at the same level, and she couldn't comprehend how someone didn't have to come in, work 10 years and then be at her level. Like,
yeah.
She didn't understand the other like years of experience that I had before that.
Yeah.
Tried to dismiss it. And that was very difficult from the very first day. I also got baited and switched on that job.
Uh-huh.
I interviewed with a different team. And then when I came in, they said, oh, by the way, we didn't get funding for that project and that team we hired you for. So you're going to work on this team, which to the credit, they found a place for me. But I didn't talk to any of the people.
So you had no idea what you were getting into.
I turned down another job
Yeah.
that I could have had. And I was left that situation. So it was very difficult. And I tried to make that work for 3 years.
Yeah. I want to get into a little bit more about your coaching and consulting business. Sure. But let me ask one other thing about personal experience, mine and yours in a way, which is you also comment a lot about different management styles, like micromanaging. I had a manager who demanded that I CC him on every external email. And the reason that I felt he was doing this, I mean, I was 40 years old. I was a vice president of original programming at a sports media company. I was not 23 years old. Right. I was capable of communicating with outside third parties. But he wanted to know what I was working on so he could put a kibosh on it, basically, or see it ahead of time and put an end to it before it got too far or too successful, in my view. So my question to you is, do you see this in your work? And how are people dealing with micromanaging? In my experience, too, a lot of this dysfunction, toxic workplace, I was in communications, media, journalism. It completely causes a chilling effect, which I think can be the worst thing that can happen to any company, but especially a media company. But what's your experience in talking to people about this kind of toxic environment?
It's a really interesting topic because micromanagement is a little like porn. Everybody says they know what it is.
Yeah.
No one can give you the words for it. And in a way, that makes sense because what feels like micromanagement to me might feel like my boss is so supportive to somebody else. So
yeah.
I do see it. I often try to get people to actually define the behaviors that are making them feel like they aren't trusted. Because at the end of the day, micromanagement is a lack of trust. And sometimes it's the manager trusting themselves, and sometimes it's the manager not trusting you. And I've also had situations where when I dug into it, I found out that the manager did not trust the person emailing. But if you just say my boss micromanages me and I hate him and I hate him or her and I want to leave, and you don't have a conversation about either, you know, this behavior makes me feel like you don't trust me. Can you help me understand why you feel like you need to do that? You can't do anything about it. So you have to be a grown-up. Identify what's actually problematic. Have the conversation. And if something doesn't change, you can say, all right, this is toxic. This person doesn't respect me. I've got to figure out my next step.
And I tried to talk to this person. I tried to take him out to lunch. And he told me basically to go F myself. I mean, and I tried to, this guy was a football player, looked like a bully and was one, you know.
Yeah.
And so then in your practice, and of course, you're coaching all kinds of people looking to perhaps make a change, not necessarily because of bullying or toxic environments. So tell me a little bit about your approach, whether people are looking for a change because of they can't get a promotion, whatever it is, and or if they're in a toxic workplace or have a bully manager. So if I come to you, how does that play out?
So I have a model that sometimes I'll talk explicitly on this.
Okay, great.
Interview about it. Sometimes I'm going through it in my head because I don't want to distract somebody with a framework. But I have a model that I've developed over the course of the years of coaching that I call aligned career cornerstones.
Okay.
And I love it because I find that it can be applicable for diagnosing whether you need to leave a job. It can be applicable for evaluating job offers. It can be also helpful to figure out, are you as a leader creating the conditions that your team needs? So the four cornerstones are the number one, right work. If you're a leader, do you have the right people in the right seats according to their aspirations and skills? For you, are you doing work that you enjoy? Are you using and developing skills that you're interested in? Do you have the right level of challenge, like not bored all the time, but not set up to fail? So those things go into right work. Do you find that you hit the state of flow a fairly good amount of time and that you don't have nonsense that you hate to do a lot of the times? So that's the right work. The right leader is about both your direct boss and the strategic direction of the organization that you're working with. So earlier in your career, your direct boss matters most because they're the one that is guiding you the most. But the farther along you go in your career, the more it also matters is the company. You know, a leader in the industry, or if they haven't been, do they have a plan to get there? Like all of those kinds of things. And when you start to hit director, VP, C-suite level, it's the same, because you may report to the COO or the CEO. So yeah, those are important. The third is environment. And I define environment as basically how your work and your life work together. You know, are you paid fairly? And do you make enough for what you need to live in life? And by fairly, I mean like market rate kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you have the flexibility that you need. I have a potential client right now I've been talking to that has an autoimmune condition. She really, really needs remote. She has it right now, but if her work said, oh, you have to come back to the office 5 days a week, like Amazon just did, she'd have
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then culture is what and there's a number of things. Can you go to your kid's soccer game? Basically,
yeah,
everything that makes work and life work together. And then finally, culture is about values in action. So people can put some values on their website, but that doesn't mean that they actually live them. And that doesn't mean that it goes along with you. So I like for people to tell me, like, how's the overlap on that Venn diagram, you know,
yeah,
and are they practicing what they preach? So everything that I do is some flavor of what do you need in these areas? And how does what you're getting align with it? How does what you're pursuing align with it? So,
and let me just say, yeah, no. I'm listening to each one and I'm thinking to myself, how many of these did I have? I mean, I'm working for myself now. I'm working with some of a couple colleagues to build a new business, but I'm thinking back on my own experience and I'm trying to think how many of those did I have and how many did I really not have?
Yeah.
And and I may have alluded to this earlier, but I think your kind of paradigm is so interesting. But so I think in terms of the work, I had all of it, right?
Yeah.
Work, right?
Yeah.
Development, taking advantage of skills I had, but the environment and the supervisor or boss or CEO,
yes,
was often really, really tough in a way that wasn't
yes,
deserving of my performance. And so my question for you is, when you're talking to people, how many have the work they like, but the people aren't, or is it more a mix?
Most people have the work they like and something else is broken. I would say probably 3/4 of the people that I work with like their work. They might want, like, oh, you know, I've been doing this for a while, I'd like to take a more strategic role and like stretch. That's, to me, that's different. Like, fundamentally, you like being in tech as a product manager. Great. You want to become a director in the future so you can lead people too. Awesome. But probably 3/4 of the people like it. They might have a job where they're like, I wish I could do more of X and less of that. But usually they have a problem with culture, environment, or boss.
Yeah.
And the rare occasions, there is occasions where everything is right except for one. So if you have the work's not right, maybe you could transfer. If your boss isn't right, but everything else is on point, maybe you can go to the other engineering or their product team.
Yeah.
But when you get into environment and culture, those are usually more systemic across the whole org.
Well, and let me answer this. I'm so curious about this too. How often, because in my case, at some places I was paid very, very well at big media companies.
Yeah.
But I think most of us, certainly I'm in this case, it didn't matter how much I was making. And when I was a more junior producer type, I was making so much less. I just wanted to be appreciated for the work I was doing and for the devotion I had. So it didn't matter. I was pleased to make more as my career developed. But ultimately, you know, the treatment, the mismanagement, if you will, was so significant despite the salary. How often do you hear from somebody who just says, I just want to get out because I'm not getting paid? And maybe it happens, but it seems to me.
I don't necessarily, just because in the niche that I do most of my work in is people that are mid-career and later, lots of them are in the tech sector. I'd say like 70% of my corporate type client, like, you know, employee type clients as opposed to clients, they're in tech. But what I find is very interesting is how often it is harder for the people to make more money to leave. And there's a couple reasons for that.
Yep.
Number one, and for starters, market rate pay is not an incentive to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Not getting market rate pay is a disincentive. But getting market rate pay, when you get a raise and it's to put you in line with the market, that's like, yes, table stakes, kind of like
show. Uh-huh. Right, right.
But the farther along you go in your career and the more money you're making, the less positions there are. Plus, you've almost always had significant lifestyle creep.
Yeah.
So you can feel as it can feel even harder to leave than someone that's a few layers down where there's 10 times more jobs available.
Yeah. And, you know, I can't help but come from so much of the questions I ask from a kind of toxic workplace perspective, because that's what the summit's all about. But I want to ask you, because you talked about COVID and the fact that so many companies now are asking people to come back more, if not 5 days a week. And so what are you hearing either from, again, a workplace aggression standpoint or a work-life balance or both? Because I think they are so often interrelated. Is it getting better, worse? Because I thought when people came home, unfortunately, because of COVID, that this incivility at the very least would diminish, but that didn't seem to happen. And so what are you hearing both from a workplace satisfaction standpoint and how people are communicating now that we're both remote and going back to work?
I think there's a lot of people, there's a toxic thing that people do where they refuse to communicate and then they blame it on the format of work.
Yeah.
I think that is unacceptable. Like if you cannot figure out if you're the boss, you have the phone number or the text or something of every single person. There's no reason a manager should not be in regular contact with their people. There's no reason that colleagues that are supposed to work together closely should not be in contact. We have all the technology for it, but a lot of people use it as an excuse. Oh, I don't like Zoom. I know it's fatiguing to be on Zoom all the time. So send a text to the person. Do a voice note. Decide that you're willing to commit to one Zoom call with your people, so that they don't feel abandoned, you know?
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of excuse making because people want to communicate the way they want to communicate instead of thinking about the people they're serving as a leader or as a colleague. And as far as whether things have gotten worse or better, I think that's very organizational and maybe to a certain degree, industry dependent.
Yeah.
Right now, there's a lot of people I know that are in tech that are feeling very, very stressed. And they're sometimes hearing the like, you should be glad to have a job, which is the most toxic thing any leader can ever say.
Yeah.
Other than outright harassment and discrimination language.
Yeah.
So it's kind of up and down depending, but that's where the culture part is so important. Because if your culture decides we are going to treat everybody with respect, even when it's hard, and that's how it's going to go as well as possible.
So, well, and that leads me to my next thing. In fact, I was thinking about this that I learned over time. That if you walk into a business, unless it's like the CIA, the more doors that are closed, I think the more toxic the workplace. Like I found, I worked a place where, because the people next door to each other's offices hated each other.
In the back.
Yeah. The more you have closed doors, the more toxic it is. Because people that are happy, that they're collaborative, they're communicating, they got their doors open.
Yes.
The online version of
is do not disturb in Teams.
Right, right. And also it's not just maybe the entire organization, but if somebody's unhappy, they have their door closed. And so that's on the island. But so given that you started, I know you're dealing with individual employees for the most part, as I understand it, but you also talk about, quite a bit about the deleterious effects of this kind of mismanagement, aggression, lack of understanding, whatever it is, just the negative impact it has on businesses that managers and leaders and CEOs don't seem to always think about. Can you go into that a little bit about?
Yeah, I sure can.
How that's done?
Yeah, I sure can. So there's two books I'm going to talk about.
Okay, great.
Anybody can get, and they're two of my most important business books. So the first book is called The No Asshole Rule. Sorry for the swear.
It's okay. You're allowed.
But it's one of the most important business books that I've ever read because it counteracts this there's this belief that people have that, well, yeah, this guy is a sexually harassing jerk, or he's abusive or mean to people all the time, but he's our top salesman. Or this is the person that knows the best how our secret sauce technology works, so we're going to let that person railroad people as much as they want. And the book, The No Asshole Rule, actually was written by someone who studied the effects of that and debunked this idea. Companies that figure out how to get rid of their assholes, and companies that figure out how to include in their hiring process how not to hire assholes, actually do better. So I'm very passionate about that. And I read that book about 15 years ago. And from that point on, I told every new boss I had, just FYI, I don't work for assholes.
Yep.
Start to act like one, I'll tell you, so we can fit, you can fix it. The other, that's a major thing. I do want people to go into behavior, but like, we know an asshole when we see one.
Yes, we do.
We know it. And on the contrast, the other book that I read a lot about that is wonderful, probably one of the most important books I've read in the last 2 years, is called The Song of Significance. And it's by Seth Godin, who, you know, most people know him as the guy that effectively invented email marketing, whether that's good or bad. He's writing a lot about leadership. And the thing that I took from that book is that the job of a leader is to create the conditions where people can do meaningful work.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no one set of conditions that someone can go down a checklist and say, if I do this, I do this, and I do this, then for any work environment, I've created the conditions to do meaningful work. You have to understand your environment, understand your people. So if you're not talking to people, if you're not making it to where they have a forum to speak to you, then you are definitely not doing your job.
Yeah. Great points. And thank you for bringing up those books. So interesting. And it seems to me that somehow the assholes found me. Every job I went to, in fact, the book that I've written about my experience, the title of my book is I Thought It Would Be Different. Because with each job I got, with each job I got, I thought, this will be different. I won't be treated this way. And, you know, because I think I'm surprised you got bullied, because, you know, you said, I don't work for bullies. And if you are one, I'm going to tell you, I never did that. I took it. I tried to shield my staffs from it, my employees, my team. And maybe once in my career I did, which I won't get into, but I think it's a really tough thing to do, to call people on it. And as I understand, you got to do it early. Like the first time it happens,
thing that people don't realize about bullying, a lot of people think that bullying is always someone was a jerk to you. You know, you've had the boss that made you CC everybody, like for everything under the sun.
Yeah.
But being frozen out.
Yeah.
Also bullying. And a lot of times we only think of that kind of bullying maybe in a situation where it's like, no one will sit with me at lunch.
You know, that's the worst.
You hear from kids.
Yeah.
But I find that there is probably more bullying in the form of freezing someone out.
No question.
Or withholding information. So they're interacting with you, but they're withholding information that you need. That is even more common. It's not necessarily going to get you sent to the HR for sexual harassment investigation, but it is absolutely insidious.
All right. So I have all kinds of being ostracized stories in my book. I'll tell you one that didn't happen to me necessarily, although I had been ostracized in my career. I was working on a television show. I was the senior supervisor or senior producer, the executive producer, who I adored, a woman. And this was a female-oriented talk show.
Okay.
And this woman had a ton of experience. She'd worked at Oprah, and she was just great. And she was my boss. Somehow, it was the most toxic environment I ever experienced. I may have told you this in a previous conversation, Diana, but I stopped counting at a dozen young women. It was mostly a young female staff, 95% women. All the women at the top ran the show, which I enjoyed. I worked for quite a good number of women, and the executive producer was great. she comes into my office one day and says, they're not inviting the executive producer. They're not inviting me to any more meetings. She had been completely ostracized.
Yeah.
She then, and so she was confiding in me. And I thought she was going to be number 13 to come cry in my office because all my staff members were so toxic. But the epilogue was that they fired her on the day they fired her was the kind of launch party of the show. And they invited her to the party. You know, she had been so kind of affected by this treatment that she didn't know which way was up. And I said, do not go to this party. And she still went to the party because she was just in a daze by everything that happened. I mean, being ostracized.
That's
all of a sudden they just stopped inviting her to meetings and she didn't understand what was happening. And so I bring that up. And we just have a couple minutes remaining. You also talk about something that I find is really interesting, which happens in toxic environments, is that people spend so much time talking about the bully boss or the mean manager or the unfair treatment of work-life balance, whatever it is. And you talk about getting people to stop gossiping because it's counterproductive. And I was curious about where you came from that. I had a big job at the Wall Street Journal, and I found that there was a lot of gossiping about all the things that were wrong. And my first meeting with my team when I became global head of video, I said, we got to stop the gossiping. We got to stop the negative talk. If there's problems, let's talk about it, but let's just not spend all our day going to each other's desks, you know, talking negatively about everything. So how did you come to that? What's your feeling about it?
I'll be very honest. I had participated in gossip more than once.
Me too. Oh, me too. Absolutely.
And I honestly think that if you have chosen one really, truly like ride or die to confide in at the office, I think that that's okay. But it's very easy for it to spread beyond that. And I'm as guilty as many other colleagues of having done that.
We all have.
I'm never first, though, you know. But one of the things that occurred to me, I think I actually had to, I knew it was harmful. And I knew that innately I was spending energy, or when I was a manager, I was watching people spend energy on being concerned and stressed out about this stuff.
Yeah.
It was not until I was really coaching full time after I left corporate in 2019 that I saw the patterns and I recognized how debilitating it was for people. And
yeah.
The reason that they're talking is because everybody's wired for belonging. So
yes.
Like being able to talk about a common problem is creates a sense of belonging, whether it's a good idea or a bad idea. There's also, you know, backbiter, whatever. And in that moment, they feel like there's a sense of belonging. So I, a few years ago, was introduced to a quote. I'm sure I'd seen it before, but it had to do with small people talk about other people. Great people talk about ideas.
Yeah.
And so that kind of flipped a switch. And now I try to get people to talk about ideas. And when I'm training people on feedback, if I'm working with leaders or others that are having a problem, I'll often talk about how can we get on the same side of an issue? What is the commonality in the mission that you and this person that you're worried about talking to or you're having an active conflict with? What is the commonality between what you're doing so that you can reframe it and try to get on the same side of the mission
instead of speaking
against each other?
So. So important. If you can get them together and if both parties are willing. By the way, it reminds me when you talked about, it was small-minded people, what they talk. My thing in the workplace bullying arena is, some people try to look taller by cutting the heads off other people.
Ooh, that's good.
that's
a real thing.
I've seen it a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there's a lot. The problem with gossip is it goes down into blame. And I just posted on Facebook yesterday. I'm a Chiefs fan.
Oh,
the refs are handing games to the Chiefs. Especially from Bengals fans. Loud, obnoxious Bengals fans. Talk about it on social media. Bengals fans.
Yes.
But I just basically said, I don't know a single successful person that spends their time blaming other people when they fail.
Great point. Yeah.
Don't know anybody that does that. Yeah. They might debrief, what can we do better? But they don't go, Andy, you're the reason that this, you're the reason that this, you know, thing happened, or you're the reason that the show failed.
Right.
They will look at themselves in first.
And yeah. There. Yeah. Great. Diana, this has been so much fun, and I've so enjoyed getting to know you. Your insights are amazing. So thank you for this engaging and informative conversation. Just terrific. I know that people might like to get more information from you, how they can get in touch with you. So first, I understand you have an offering for the people watching and listening.
I do. I have a freebie for people that is going to help them figure out, is it time to walk away? So they can go through this. Listen, I'm going to do a video. And then I think, I don't know, this is 2 months before we're releasing it. So I may throw in like a little checklist or a little something like that. But just to try to help people go through and think, is it actually, I feel weird about this job. Is it actually time for me to start making moves? So I'm going to tell you when you should walk away. And in honor of Kenny Rogers, I am also going to tell you when you should run. So, you can grab that. And the link to get that is isittimetowalk.com.
Okay, great. And what about if people want to just avail themselves of your resource?
Yeah, they can go to my website, DianaAlt.com, one N, like Princess Diana was. And there's a link that you can either send in a contact. My email is listed there. All my socials are listed there. And you can also book an intro call so we can talk about what you might want to work on.
So. Terrific. Perfect. Diana, thank you. Final word from me. Bully targets and those of you in toxic work environments or those that need to make a change, let's aim to make that change in the workplace for good. Thanks for watching and listening.